Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. I am your host, Sean Hayes, as always, every week. And with us this week, special guest, Jamal.
Oh, man, Sean, thanks for having me. As a fellow pop culture, video game, and movie enthusiast, I was excited to get an invite to be featured.
Yeah, a little bit of backstory. Jamal and I used to work together at Crane & Company and talk shop about all sorts of nerd stuff way back in the day. I've been trying to get him on the podcast for a while, and just schedules never quite lined up. But Spider-Man came out, and we got to do it. And because it happened to come out during like Christmas break, schedules finally lined up. So this is the 8-Bit Adventures podcast, as always, bringing you the latest and greatest geeky news of the past week. However, because it's a big movie release, we're going to talk about the Spooderman. This episode is going to be a spoiler cast. So we are going to just talk about whatever we feel like. So if you haven't seen it yet, maybe hold on to this, put this one in the can and wait, come back to it after you've seen it, maybe digested it a little bit, thought about it. Cause we're both very excited. So, all right. Now that we said that, no news segment, this week, no quest log or whatever. We're just going to talk about Spider-Man. So let's get right into it. Okay. So Jamal, I know you had posted sort of a short review on Facebook, in which, if I recall, if I may sort of paraphrase in one word, is you called it the perfect movie.
I did. It's I've seen it twice now. I've watched some other reviews, and you know, I've seen that there's some criticism that have come out that we'll talk about. But to me, it's still a perfect film. And I don't know if it's just because I'm comparing it to other movies that have tried similar things. I don't know if it's because I'm bias in my fandom of Spider-Man. But for me, you know, from start to finish, as I was in the theater, and obviously, you know, you could watch any film and you can pick apart plot holes and things, continuity, whatever. You can do that all the time. But when I was watching on that Thursday night, throughout the 2.5-hour runtime, I was so immersed, and there I was just with it every single step of the way. And that's rare for a film, you know? Like, I see a lot of movies. I love going to the theater, but I was in it 100% of the time. I laughed. I cried. I felt the adrenaline rush. I was oohing and aahing. It was, to me, it was perfect. It was such a wonderful experience.
How was the vibe in the theater? Because was it opening night?
Yeah, I went Thursday. I think we went to go see like a 6 or 6:30 show. Mm-hmm. We saw it in 2D. Pandemic and everything. Like, I don't need to see anything in 3D just yet. I just want to be in the theater. And there were quite a few people there who were just like reacting to everything at the right moment in the right way. So it was great. You know, no additional commentary, but a lot of like, oh, wow. Like, oh, I can't believe it. You know, when if we're already talking spoilers, you know, the reveal of Daredevil being part officially mm-hmm. of the MCU, having the same person.
Yep.
You know, obviously when the villains show up, obviously when the Spider-Men come up, it was just like, it was great to be in a space where everyone appreciated what was on screen and they were just there to have a good time. It, you know, like, I don't know if we've spoken about this before, but like going to see the Star Wars films, you can feel it in the air, the disappointment that people are just racking up as those films go through the runtime. They don't react like you get some of the crowd to do this, but it's a lot of not, you know, it's not a vibe. But Spider-Man, whole way from start to finish, the whole audience was there. They were together. It definitely felt like being part of an active community and just watching it live. It was the closest I'll probably ever get to being in a Comic-Con panel.
That's so we went this past weekend.
Okay.
And we did like a noon showing. So we went to like a matinee showing and it was pretty quiet. So it was like very different vibe in the theater where, you know, because they're like, it was kind of an empty theater. So, yeah. It didn't have that electricity, that like, so we went to see Endgame, you know, sort of close to opening weekend when it initially came out. And the times that I've gone to see like the Star Wars films on opening night. And there, you know, there are people excited and everything. But, you know, for me, it was, as you know, like when Charlie Cox was on screen as Daredevil, I was just like, oh, yeah, because so. So we did say this was a spoiler cast. All right. So if you haven't seen Hawkeye. All right. Also, get out. but like, so that was, I had like heard, I don't know if it was like some offhand comment or whatever, of like, oh yeah, so Vincent D'Onofrio or whatever. I was like, slam my hands down on the table, like Phoenix Wright or whatever. Like, wait a minute. What do you mean Vincent D'Onofrio? Like, what do you mean Kingpin's there? And then I was like, oh man. Oh, this changes everything.
And what's wild is that Marvel did it the same day. So they released Spider-Man. It comes out on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
You get Charlie Cox. Hawkeye goes into streaming that episode on Disney Plus that day, and you get that last image at the end of the episode where he shows up on, where Kingpin shows up on the camera phone. So it's just like, it's right. Crazy because you're talking about how you had that experience and how like you were so excited and you were weaving things together. But being, and I didn't go to a packed show. Like it was probably like maybe a third full, but being with those people and having people know what you know and react was so fun.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Yeah. It was, wow. It was, now what I want to know, from you, Sean, is like, I've seen some criticism for the film in terms of like, you know, everyone wants to talk about like Acts 2 and 3. But no one's talking about Act One that much. What did you think about that opening of the film? It picks right up, right off of, you know, Far From Home.
Mm-hmm.
And we are literally in that moment. I thought it was fun. What'd you think?
I like that. You know, I do like sort of when, if you're going to have it be like an actual trilogy film, which like, it's a little weird trilogy because like there are other films that take place in the middle of it that Spider-Man appears in, it's also nice in that like it gives you a very definitive how much time has passed, and it's like very clear that it is, you know, the time frame is maybe a couple weeks tops. And so I like that it sort of like goes right into, you know, from Far From Home into No Way Home. I also like, there was some criticism over just the whole spell. Right. And like how, oh, well, why didn't Peter just think of like, well, why, what if everybody forgot Mysterio or whatever? And it's like, I mean, Peter Parker might be a genius, but like, he's still a high school kid.
Right.
I mean, right. I was a high school kid once. You can be a smart high school kid and you're still not that smart. Like, or not wise, I should say. Like, you don't, like, especially when it's something as big and monumental as, oh, the whole world thinks I'm a murderer and the whole world, my whole identity's been compromised. I mean, these are things that, like, that, like, CIA agents dread. Like undercover CIA agents would dread, right? And even on a much smaller scale, they would dread. So like now imagine, you know, you're, I don't know, 17, 18 years old and, you know, you don't have any of that training. It's all just, you know, hey, just go do your thing. Don't get hurt. And here's some shiny tech. And now it's like literally the entire world is now, hey. And so like it's, you know, paparazzi and all sorts of like conspiracy theorists and everything. And you are just the focus of like an entire world. And the fact that you're a minor also like that's also adds an element to it. So like, I don't have a problem with Peter being like, I can't think of a great solution because there is all this pressure and weight riding down on this. So like, this is the most direct solution I can think of. And I think Strange, you know, like he doesn't get the full picture until after the fact. And, you know, cause he's got other stuff that he's doing or that he's trying to think of. And he's like, oh yeah, this will be, you know, easy or whatever. Like, and he just dismisses like, oh yeah, nice knowing you, Peter Parker or whatever.
We've used it for less. He was like, we've used it for less. He suffered enough. He's an Avenger. It's like, I was like, all right, well, he's on board. My whole thing about the spell, and it's interesting because I've spoken to people about it and everyone, the spell, Strange did it too easy. It's like, for me, okay, as a Spider-Man fan, I've read so many of the comics, right? I was so, like, even like now, like, Sean, you didn't, like we didn't mention this to your audience yet, but like, I'm a high school teacher. I teach high school literature, right? And I love stories. Yep. But before I fell in love with books, I fell in love with comics, and Spider-Man was it for me. I read everything I could get my hands on. And I was such a diehard Spider-Man fan. When it came time for that post-Civil War arc for Spider-Man with Mephisto, Brand New Day and One More Day and whatever those stories were, it really turned me off to the character because it was so very out of character for Peter Parker to be that selfish and irresponsible after like his whole arc is about like his whole character is like, I'm gonna be responsible, I'm gonna take on this guilt and I'm gonna make the best decision even if it costs me. And suddenly they turned their back to that to just retcon him and make him so totally different, which meant he just was doing things that just didn't jive with me. And I was like, yo, I hate this. Marvel, in terms of the cinematic universe, they took my least favorite Spider-Man story and made it fun. And that's where it stops for me. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Is that like in terms of the metagame of Marvel adapting comics from years ago to screen for audiences to gravitate to and for them to continue moving forward, they took the story that I used least and used it as a way to make this MCU Spider-Man's trilogy his entire origin story. I just thought it was so clever. And I'm not going to get mad. I can't be upset at the film. Who directed it? John Watts?
Yes.
You know, like, I love how they did that because here you have this story that is widely viewed as a blemish on Spider-Man's history and legacy, and they flipped it to make it fun. They flipped it to make it about this teenage character who was centered on himself, who had to learn. And I was like, you know what? It wasn't perfect in the comics, but it's perfect for film and the way that it repurposes something that was panned by so many audiences. I was just impressed. And maybe I'm too easily impressed, but I was like, wow, making it Doctor Strange instead of Mephisto, so you're not convoluting this by giving us a different character that Strange to actually meet later on. You know, you kind of get this story where, like, you get the classic superhero team up, but they got to fight before they actually do the thing together. It was enjoyable. And that's all I need. It's a comic book film. It doesn't have to be pitch perfect every time. I'm willing to write things off if they add to the lore into the fandom. And they did. It was great. It was great.
I love the fact that essentially we were bamboozled into a superhero origin story.
Yeah, exactly. And
that, because that's been a big criticism of, like, particularly Batman films, right? Is that they keep retelling the origin of Batman as opposed to just like just give us more Batman, right? Like, because we all, you know, at this point, we all know how Batman begins. And that was, I guess that was a criticism of Spider-Man too, was like, you know, we don't need to see Uncle Ben again. But the fact that they did it over the course of this film, you know, and then it sort of became like an aha moment of like when Aunt May dies and they do that whole scene. Yeah. It's like, wait a minute. Right. Like, no, this is how we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh man.
Had me sobbing. I mean, I know we're hop, skipping and jumping through this, but it was, I didn't expect it. Another criticism I have of the comics for Spider-Man is like, they make him far too reliant. Like, I know you want to keep the characters alive to keep dynamics and make things familiar, but like, how long is Aunt May going to be old in the comics? You know, when it came out in 63 in Amazing Fantasy, she already looked like she was in her 70s. Yeah. You're telling me she's 70, 80 years old in 2015, you know? So, and what I thought was so wild is that, like, I don't know if you played the PlayStation 4 Spider-Man.
I haven't, no.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't want to.
But it's okay. It's okay.
Okay. Well, spoilers for that is that at the end of that game, they kill off Aunt May. Mm-hmm. And many Spider-Man fans were raving about how, you know, Insomniac was bold enough to do something that the comics never had the guts to do. And when they did do it, they retconned it immediately. You know, so like when the film took that step, it's like, wow, you're really working towards giving us the perfect Peter Parker. And like Peter Parker in those first two films, a lot of people didn't like how irresponsible he was, how he was Iron Man Jr. But one, personally, I love the fact that they incorporated tech way more. I love the fact that he was less of a, I guess for lack of a better term, less of a crybaby. You know, there's so much crying in the Raimi and the Mark Webb movies.
Yeah.
But like, you know, Tom Holland, when he hits the screen for Watts, is that like, it's a lot of fun. Like he might shed a tear here and there, but it's enjoyable. It's something different. You know, and then like, just like, it's just, I just love how they got to that point. And like you said, they tricked us into an origin story, right? You had these two films before, you get to this third one and it's like, all right, there's no Iron Man. He's going to end up having to fill his shoes. They alluded to that when he's like building his suit on the fabricator in Far From Home. And then they turn around and they strip him of all of that. And it's like, yes.
Yeah.
So good. So unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Oh, I loved it. So yeah, when they killed May, it was just like, I didn't think they would. They haven't done it in years in so many iterations of the story, but here they go. Out here trying to do something different, and I'm here for it because it's different.
I think just in terms of a plot device, also it kind of saved us from like a potentially more heartbreaking ending, because if she had survived and then when Strange does the spell again and everybody forgets Peter, like now imagine like the person who raised you like has no memory of you. And introduces like some weird things going on of like, you know, well, like you didn't remember that you had a nephew, just sort of a thing. Yeah. But so it kind of serves a convenient like wrapping things up, you know, with family connections. Oh, it was still hard. I was like, oh.
I mean, we got to give her credit. She acted her behind off in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
She was wonderful. It was like, yeah, okay, Marvel, you out here really doing the dark stuff. That was, I would say that was up there. I mean, we doing spoiler talk, you know, we got to reference the previous Spider-Man films and Mark Webb's The Amazing Spider-Man 2, the Gwen Stacy scene. That scene really got me. And that scene always makes me like, wow, they really out here just giving Spider-Man a terrible life.
Yeah.
And I think this scene with Aunt May and No Way Home kind of mirrors that in the sense that like they were willing to really be like, oh yeah, Spider-Man's all about comedy. He's all about fun and being friendly. But actually this guy is a Greek tragedy, you know? So, it was great to see.
Well, and the fact that it was like, you see her like get thrown around and it's bad. But like, then she keeps going and she's like, oh, well, okay. So maybe, maybe it's not that bad, you know, and maybe like, you know, Peter's going to know, gets her to safety or whatever. And then it's like all of a sudden, like the light switches and it's just, she is down and there's just blood everywhere. And it's like, oh no. Oh no, this is bad. Oh, this is bad. And like the cops are showing up and the feds are showing up
and he gets shot.
And he showed up like, yeah, I was just like, you shot a kid.
Yeah.
Like you might be a superpower kid, but like you shot a high school student.
Right. Oh, yeah, it was wow. But I mean, like when we think about this, we also got to remember like how she got to her death and the fact that all these villains from previous Spider-Man films came in, which I thought it was so cool because like, one, I saw this meme earlier today where it's Bully Maguire talking to Iron Man and he says, hey, technically I'm the first MCU film now. Which was kind of interesting to think about.
Yep.
But also this idea that like for so long in superhero films, ahead of like Loki, you know, in the MCU, is that typically if you had a superhero villain, is that they died in that same film that they were introduced.
Yes.
But this kind of fixes that. Well, not really fixes it, but like, it presents it, it allows us to have those characters, it allows us to have those actors to come back and to do something that we all wanted to see. Like, I don't know what's Hollywood's deal with just like rushing through those stories. Like, you know, let the villains be villains. Let them have their arcs, their stories and stuff, because like their villainy is important to character growth for the heroes. And when you remove them in the same film you introduce them in, like Dark Knight, man, like when they kill Harvey Dent at the end, I was like, bro, the everything they could have done with him after,
yeah,
just out the window.
I feel like later, maybe phase two, MCU kind of changed the game, and that it showed that you can do sort of an extended story over multiple films. Because I think prior to that, everybody was like, we got to get as much as we can out of this one film. And like, we can't leave stuff hanging because if the film is not great, like doesn't do well, which a lot of them didn't, you know,
right.
Daredevil, Elektra,
not great films.
the Hulk, not the Incredible, or I can't remember which one came first. If it was the Incredible Hulk or the Hulk,
the Hulk came first. Incredible Hulk is the one with Edward Norton.
Okay.
Yeah. So but yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And it's like, you know, like when we like think about Star Wars, we love Darth Vader, you know, not because of just how violent this guy is and how he loomed over, like him and Voldemort, is that they had rumors about these villains throughout the whole series, and then you get to see them at the end and it's like, oh, this is a bad dude.
Yeah.
Like you let it breathe, just like any other character, they need time to develop. And that doesn't mean that you have to do an origin story in every film, right? You can you can sprinkle their origin throughout. That's why I love like what you're saying about phase two really doing things differently to tell those elongated stories. I love now what phase we're in, four, five?
We're in phase four. Yeah.
With phase four, the way that they're introducing characters in series and in other movies,
yeah,
I'm all for it. Like, you know, I know we're skipping around and stuff. At the end of No Way Home, you get the Doctor Strange teaser, and you get America Chavez, I think her name is. They keep alluding to her. Like, yes, I'm down for that. Like, give me new characters. Mm-hmm. Let them breathe. Let them have space. So, so these villains coming back, you know, Alfred Molina and Jamie Foxx, so glad that he got to redeem himself in that character. He's totally not the same Electro that he was in the previous film. They just seems like it's just Jamie Foxx with electricity powers, but that's okay.
He was funny. He was
good. You know, you get Sandman, you know, you get the Lizard, the Sinister Five, apparently. Yep. So,
Who is the remaining member of the Sinister Six?
Kraven.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes it's Kraven, sometimes it's Mysterio.
On
one or two occasions it was Venom. Yeah.
And because they already got rid of Kraven, right?
Kraven hasn't been featured yet.
Oh, he hasn't been featured. Okay, I think I'm getting him mixed up with what's his name? That was in Black Panther. Claw?
Killmonger.
No, not Killmonger, but essentially the guy that is Killmonger's accomplice. Yeah, that's who I'm getting him mixed up with. Yeah.
Yeah, Claw is I was surprised that they killed him. He's supposed to be a thorn in Black Panther's side the whole time, always breaking in, stealing stuff, but
yeah.
That's neither here nor there right now. But
yeah. Okay, so they haven't featured Kraven yet, so that might be an interesting thing for future MCU.
Well, Sony is supposed to have Kraven.
That's true, yes.
They're supposed to get Morbius. They got Venom. They're supposed to get Morbius, and then they're supposed to get Kraven. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know how interested I would be in Kraven just by himself.
Yeah, especially since, like, with all of the other stories that we've gotten.
Right.
He seems kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if it were a D&D game, he's sort of a tier one. Like phase one villain, where it's, you know, very local and focused, you know, like if we've already done like big multiversal universal threat, like a guy that, you know, it's just a big game hunter that also hunts like superheroes.
Well,
is that exciting?
You know, but yeah. I think what would be cool though, I wouldn't put it past them. I know Spider-Man 2 on the PS4 is foreshadowing Kraven. You're going to get Venom and Kraven, Spider-Man and Miles Morales, and Spider-Man PS5 too,
yeah.
Right? But what I'm thinking is Peter Parker, and I've heard this, I'm not going to, I think it was, what's his name, Rob, I can't remember his last name, but he does comics and movies and stuff on YouTube. But he was saying is that, like, he thinks that Kraven is going to be Tom Holland's next big bad because Tom Holland essentially lost all of his tech. So now he has to be just he just has to be a regular Spider-Man. So if he's a regular Spider-Man with close to zero tech, is that someone like Kraven, like what you're saying, where he's just like, no, he's just really smart, he has great combat skills, and he likes to hunt. He could be a legitimate threat, especially if
that's
Spider-Man
true.
Is super tied to the Avengers. You know, I think Kraven is like, Kraven is the Spider-Man as Bane is the Batman. You know, someone who's super smart, who's just like, I'm gonna just beat you with my hands and then do something sick. Like Bane opened up, you know, the prisons and got Batman all tired out, then broke his back. Kraven was hunting Spider-Man down, threatening everyone he loved, cornered him, and then buried him alive. I'm down to see that arc. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think it's to touch on that though. So at the end of this film, everyone forgets Peter Parker. Mm. And I thought it was. I think I agree with the choice in the film that Peter makes, where, you know, he walks into the coffee shop where MJ works and, you know, Ned's there. And instead of going through this whole spiel that he had and I guess fulfilling the promise that he made to them to, like, you know, like, to search them out and, like, make them remember sort of a thing. I mean, they leave it a little bit open-ended. I like to think that he thinks, well, it could go one of two ways. Either he just leaves them alone so that they don't get hurt. And that's alluded to, like, looking at the bandage on MJ's forehead and being like, that's on me. Or potentially kind of just trying to meet up with them organically and just sort of reforge that friendship. Just, you know, the way you normally would when meeting new people.
Instead of having a speech written in your pocket.
Yeah. Right.
Hi,
instead
I'm
of being like,
Parker.
Hi, I'm Peter Parker. You don't remember me, but here's all this stuff that, like, I'm actually Spider-Man.
Yeah. But, speaking of that, with like the whole thing with the bandage, two things. Hold on. I know we know at this point, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield in the film. I just gotta say, him with the MJ with the bandage, when Zendaya plays that, does that really well. You see what Peter Parker's thinking of, and he's like, oh man, I just can't be that selfish. But then going back to when Andrew Garfield was just watching them when they're in the lab, mm-hmm. and he's just watching Tom Holland and Zendaya, that Peter, that MJ, and he's like looking all sad, and then Toby's like, "Do you have someone?" And he was like, "No, couldn't save her." And then he gets his redemption by saving MJ on the scaffolding.
That was great.
It was so good. It was so good that they're talking about allowing him to finish his trilogy, which I think the whole time, and I'm running on a tangent, I got this though, is that like Andrew Garfield, I always thought he was a great Spider-Man. I didn't think he was a great Peter Parker because he was too cool. But I wonder how much of it just has to do with the script and like meddling by, what's that guy? Avi Arad or whatever. Just like always trying to do things at the studio. Like Andrew Garfield with that script that he had for No Way Home, pitch perfect Peter Parker.
Absolutely proves that he can, that like he's a great actor, and that it was other stuff involved in the making of those films. And I've heard that echoed elsewhere as well.
I just wonder how much of like that whole thing, like Andrew Garfield watching them and him talking about how he lost Gwen and couldn't save her, and then Peter seeing the bandage and everything that went down, he's like, man, like if I learn anything from those other Spider-Men, it's that like I should probably back off, you know? So I wonder how much that contributed to that. And just, you know, that was just some great acting all around. That whole final like hour of that film, I could just like, when I eventually get it on Blu-ray, I could skip everything else and just jump to the final hour and watch that over and over and over again. It was so good. So good.
Yeah. Oh, and just the Andrew Garfield and just his acting in the moments after he saved MJ was top notch. And just it wasn't over the top, but just the way he asked, like, "You okay?" And he conveys just sort of like the, like, not only the pain, but also the feeling of redemption. And then the fact that he also kind of got the redemption at the end with Green Goblin as well. Which I'm really glad that they managed to get Willem Dafoe back, because, I mean, he is just another out there.
It's interesting how, like, you take the campiness of, like, the 2002 Sam Raimi Spider-Man and how Willem Dafoe was, and you put him in this movie, and it's campy, but then it's also scary.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
You know? It was, and the way he was just ragdolling Tom Holland, like that Peter Parker 1 apparently.
Yeah.
Throwing him through walls, like, it looked like a full-blown, like, pro wrestling match. Like, I just love that they did that because, like, you know, if Willem Dafoe started doing backflips and super kicks and taekwondo, I don't believe it. But you really just have him being, like, a formidable foe.
It's just raw power.
And that's what the Green Goblin is. He's not a martial artist. He's just, like, slamming you, like, doing really dirty stuff. And, oh, I loved it. I heard he did a lot of his own stunts.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, they were saying, I saw something, like, Willem Dafoe said he would only come back if they let him really lean into the goblin, but also let him do a lot of his stunts.
Wow.
So, yeah, he's out there having a really good time, and he looked really good. Even how they redid the costume, like, they break the helmet right in the beginning. They're like, "We're going to give him goggles, put this hoodie on, get it tattered up in the middle of the fight." And he looked very much like the comic. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, just how, like, that sort of tattered, I don't know, cloak that he picked up when he was in the shelter, then, like, you know, becomes sort of like the goblin cloak, was really good. I guess that made me, like, jump a couple steps going from, like, that to Hobgoblin to Harry Osborn to Ned,
because
that's how my brain functions, I guess. And Ned being magical.
Yeah,
which was great. You know, I have said for a long time that I always wanted to see an MCU film where it was just like a lot of the sidekick characters. So it was, you know, where you'd get like Ned, you'd get Korg and Mick, you know, Happy, And like, it's just them, and they have to do something. Like they all have to get together and do something. I don't know what, but like, just because I thought that would be a really interesting sort of like comedic type, you know, especially if it would be like directed by Taika Waititi.
That would be perfect.
I mean, even do it as just like a one-off like TV special or something or whatever. And it's like, they don't do anything important. But it might just be like they're planning a party at the Avengers compound or something. Because I just want to see those characters all interact with each other.
And I think what this film does well is that it addresses the fact, like, say, Endgame. The problem with Endgame, everyone was like, none of the characters got to do anything unless you were Cap or Iron Man. That was it, you know, is that everyone else showed up. They had a line or two, but it was still, you know, spectacle, a lot of fun. But in retrospect, they were like, I wish this character said this. I wish this character said that. And my review that I wrote, the thing that I mentioned is that it seemed like the people in charge of this film looked at Infinity War, Endgame, Star Wars, all the sequel trilogy, like the final Harry, they looked at all those things in the fandom and said, let's make sure we don't make the mistakes that the fans identified. So like when you're talking about these side character moments, I love that Ned and MJ were just in the lab together trying to get the sling ring going. I love that, like, you know, Doc Ock and Jamie and Electro and the Lizard were all bantering, you know? Like, I love that Happy has a moment with Aunt May and they're talking about their relationship. It's like the things that Marvel always gets docked for, and like they're like, this would work better as a series. It seems like they tried their best to do it in this film. And the pinnacle of that is putting all the Peter Parkers in the lab together. That was my favorite. Yes. Oh man. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, that was great. and then just you know, little moments of like that, I don't necessarily know if it made sense within the context of the film, but like little jokes of like sort of a meta joke of, you know, Toby Spidey, you know, just being like, ah, yeah, like my back hurts. Ah, like I can't just get it. Like, I'm so old. I can't. Can you just like crack my back? You know,
the fan service was high and mighty and it was wonderful. You know, I saw this, not too far away from Ghostbusters Afterlife. So it was interesting that Ghostbusters Afterlife, and I'm not a big Ghostbusters fan, but it's Ghostbusters. Like, I'm going to go see it. And so many people were like coming down on it for like fan service and too much nostalgia. But then you get Spider-Man and it does the same things. And it's like, I know people are picky and choosy about, you know, depending on what fandom it is and who are the characters and stuff like that. But like these characters get to be themselves. Like Toby, Andrew, and Tom are all distinguishable from each other. And those little moments and conversations aren't like, they don't really seem like just jokes, but they are a way to reaffirm their archetypes. Like Tobey Maguire is, you know, humble and a bit more quiet and shy. Whereas Andrew is, well, other than being really guilty, but he's, you know, kind of like a smart aleck and a bit more witty and outspoken. Whereas Tom is youthful and irresponsible and like, they all got to do that with that banter, with that fun, with, you know, talking about the web shooters. Does it come out of any place else? Yep. Or like,
yeah.
You know, I'm in the Avengers. Are you part of a band? Like, so much good stuff to, and then all of them swinging together. Like,
yes,
it does the films, the fan service, but it also delivers on, it just delivers on so many other points. I think it's, when I say perfect, it's like that experience for me, there's only a few movies that have ever given me kind of like an outer body experience during a screening. You know, like Black Panther, Into the Spider-Verse, Queen and Slim, and now this film. It was just like, I was smiling. I was so elated the whole time because it got so much right. So much.
Yeah.
Man, so, we didn't talk at all about Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
That whole fight sequence was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, it was. I always love when Doctor Strange gets to like do stuff. Just because, I mean, playing with portals is fun. so, and then getting sort of out-scienced in the Mirrorverse, I thought was great, you know. And it you know, it goes to back to show that, like, that, yeah, you know, once again, like, you know, yes, Peter is going to make very rash, hasty decisions because he's a teenager, but he's also, like, an engineering genius and right. figures out, like, oh, hey, this is a mathematical pattern here because it's mirrors, apparently. So, yeah, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do what spiders do and use math to spin webs. And haha, caught Doctor Strange.
It was so clever, and it looked great, you know. And I know, like, like the CGI clearly looks like CGI, but like in that moment, that screen was so big, and I was so immersed in it, it didn't matter to me. I was just like, this looks awesome, this is like a comic coming to life. But what I really love about that moment is how they really, throughout all three of these like home Spider-Man films for the MCU, is they drive home the fact that he's an engineer, that he's a genius, that he's a scientist.
Yeah.
Every chance they get to have Peter solve something with science, he does. Whereas, like, you know, Toby, like, with the train sequence is that, yeah, it's a lot of webbing, but it's like he just had to have guts. You know, he had to be responsible. He wouldn't fall. And then with Andrew Garfield, with his Spider-Man was, you know, a lot of it was, it came down to his wit and how that, his wit and his humor crashed right up against the responsibility and the danger, you mm-hmm. know. So, but every chance they get for MCU Spider-Man for Tom Holland, he's using his brain, and it's a lot of fun to see.
Yeah. One thing I do want to, so speaking of Doctor Strange, I thought it was an odd choice for the second post-credit teaser to be what ended up just being the trailer for Multiverse of Madness. Like,
right.
I feel like if you're like, don't do that. Like, because you're just going to release it like a week later. And I would rather have something like unique and original.
Mm.
And then of course, like the Venom one was just weird.
Yeah. It was weird. I wonder how much of this had to do with COVID. And how much of it had to do with, like, getting schedules down and not being able to get another scene in, you know?
Possibly. I hadn't considered that, but, I know the Venom thing, I think, was just Sony wanting to reinforce that, like, oh, hey, remember Venom? We've got Venom, too.
That didn't go as I thought it would, but, hey, whatever, the symbiote is there, I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of the post-credit scenes. Just, you know, for those reasons. Because I was like, oh, okay, the Venom one, alright, or whatever. Oh, he gets poofed back, okay. Because I had thought that Venom was going to be an MCU addition, and it turns out he's not. Sort of. And then, like, I had already seen the trailer for Multiverse of Madness. So then when I saw the post-credits scene, and I'm like, oh, wait, we've seen this already. So,
Yeah. You know what I do wonder? I wonder how much of them kind of fumbling that Venom mid-credit scene and, you know, him being there, him not being there, but the symbiote being left behind is a way for Kevin Feige and his team to say, like, Sony, we trusted y'all with so much, and we know y'all just gonna mess it up. We want to be able to do our own Venom. Like, how much of that is them just saying, like, all right, Tom Hardy, go over there. We're gonna do our own version.
I don't know, because Sony still has the rights, though.
Yeah, well, they also got the rights to Spider-Man.
I wonder if it's just them, potentially them saying, like, now we're gonna partner up next time for this one, instead of letting you take the reins and really, really throw our weight around for it.
Well, I did see that Kevin Feige said they were like, someone asked them about like partnering more with Sony. And he was like, you know, for me, it's like, I can't just hop in and give you advice. The best way for me to help you is for me to just take it and do it myself. So, you know, I'm curious to see how that would go. And I know like that would put Venom in this box where he would be, subjected to all these MCU-isms that some people who are expressing concerns about. I actually don't mind it. You're going to give me some comedy so I could bring kids to watch the show. You're going to give me some serious moments that may go over kids' heads, and you're going to put them next to each other. I'm okay with it. It's fun. It's fine. I mean, yeah.
I wonder if those concerns are already being voiced by people who were, because I think Venom was and Carnage were PG-13.
Yeah, they
and they didn't like that.
It wasn't. They should have pulled the trigger. That film was inconsequential, other than the yeah. last like 20 minutes. It was you had a situation where at the end of Venom 1, they learned to work together and they said they were the lethal protector. And then you get to Venom 2, and they're not protecting nothing.
Yeah.
You do the whole sing and dance of being an odd couple all over again, and it was and I personally, I don't know about you, this is just me, is that like when characters are too big, it's like overwhelming for me. It doesn't interest me. So like Venom being like 10 feet tall, Carnage being like 12 feet tall, even something similar to like the Ninja Turtles from Michael Bay or whatever. When the characters are too big, it ruins the scale and the tension for me. Like they might as well be Transformers at that point, you know?
Pretty much,
like, for me, I've always imagined, yeah, Venom is bigger than Spider-Man, but Carnage is much leaner and much smaller. So I'm just hoping if they bring them into the MCU as they're projecting, is that we get, like, even with Thanos, like, I felt like he was too big to do so much of the hand-to-hand stuff for it to be interesting. So, like, if they do it, just, like, you know, scale it down a bit so they can actually, like, get down with the fisticuffs.
I didn't mind Thanos, though, given that he's supposed to be a Titan.
True,
so, like, it makes sense in that specific case. But I think I tend to agree, because, like, once you start getting into, like, you know, sort of giants, you know, then it kind of, like, starts pushing into, like, is this sci-fi? Is this starting to lean more into fantasy? You know, because I know I remember that being an issue of like some of the Marvel games. It was Marvel. God, maybe it was Ultimate Alliance 2. Is that the one that was for the GameCube back in the day?
Yeah.
Where it had you fight frost giants, and it was like, like, how is this different than, you know, me just playing D&D on a Friday night?
Right.
Because that's what it feels like when you start getting to like. Or it's like it then introduces problems like X-Men have with all the Sentinels. Like, how are Sentinels getting around anywhere?
Yeah.
Sorry, this was something that I wanted to bring up prior in our discussion of villains that like last throughout several movies. I forgot X-Men did it with good old Magneto. Although Magneto's kind of a weird case, because like you're not gonna get rid of Magneto after one film. Like you're not gonna sign on Sir Ian McKellen for one X-Men film. So
but even when you think about that, all right, say go back to X-Men.
Yeah.
One with the scale with Apocalypse, that was the situation in which they should have went the opposite direction and made him bigger. They got this dude, Oscar Isaac, who's smaller than half of the cast,
yes.
Didn't look like Apocalypse. All right, so that's that one. But going back into villains, like, lasting, it's interesting because, like, many of the other villains that they introduced, there was so much where they were like, well, just how many X-Men can we fit? Is that they were coming in and they were unnamed. And you had to talk to your friends to be like, wait, who was that? Like, Lady Deathstrike was an X-2? I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Because she never had a name, you know? And then she's killed as soon as she's introduced. So, same thing with Silver Samurai, right? Or with Tusk, or with who else they had, even what's his name, Toad. Like, so many of them, they're just like, oh, they're there, they're not there, you know. So I'm glad that they're doing something different. I'm glad that they're making changes.
Juggernaut should have been bigger in X3.
Right.
But then they rectified that with Deadpool 2, so you know, I'm okay with that.
A lot of fun. Him and Colossus were both big. So
yeah.
But it makes sense within the parameters of the universe and the logic of the film.
Yes.
So,
well,
like,
and with it being like being big is their kind of their shtick.
Right, exactly.
So that make like now it's special instead of just like, oh, everybody's big.
Yes, the thing. When everyone's big, like when Venom's big and Carnage is big, it's like, okay, and then you never clearly distinguish what their powers are. They both have blade hands, you know. So like say like when we go back to Spider-Man, what was really interesting and that I enjoyed, like so often in the MCU films, is that like when you really get a big story, it's like you got the hero, but the villain just mirrors whatever powers they have. They're like a doppelganger. But in this, everyone had clearly distinguishable powers, and they use those abilities in their fight scenes.
Yes.
Doc Ock, when he's all over like the bridge, and then Electro when he's on the wires and stuff. And
yep.
Sandman, I thought looked great. I heard a lot of people say he looked terrible. I thought he looked really good. You know, so like I thought that was cool. And then, you know, with each of the Spider-Men using their weapons and swinging and like collaborating, the part where they couldn't work together and they were clotheslining each other, hilarious.
And it made sense because, you know, you think about it, like, yeah, there like were no other superheroes really to cross over with for, you know, Tobey's Spider-Man films. And then by the time Amazing Spider-Man had come out, it's like, do you want to team up with any of those superheroes? Probably not.
Right. You're part of a band? What are their Avengers? You're part of a band? So good.
That was the thing where if they somehow managed to finagle, you know, Fox into the picture or whatever, it could have been like, oh, you mean like the Fantastic Four?
Right. Yeah. I was wondering.
Are they like the Fantastic Four? And then, you know, I don't know. That would have been a bit much, but like, oh, if they had managed to do that. But, you know, also, I mean, the hurdles they jumped through to make this film happen and all the different stuff was outrageous already. So
paperwork, you know, must have been insurmountable. Like,
I think of just getting people interested in like to come back and to do stuff.
And get in shape.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
People were remarking on how like was I guess in lead ups to the movie, I guess Andrew Garfield has like another film that's coming out. So like they would book interviews with him and say that it was for that other film and then sneak Spider-Man questions into there. And he would have to like be caught off guard and just like straight out lie like, no, nobody's talked to me. I don't know what's going on. You'll have to ask. You'll have to ask Tom. I don't know.
Right.
But like, nobody talked to Toby.
No, because he didn't have anything running, so it was just like, yep, he was there.
And I guess he's notoriously like hostile to paparazzi or whatever. So everybody was just like, "No, we're not gonna poke Toby. You know, we'll get Bully Parker."
Which is funny. Yeah, exactly. He's so nice in the film. I can't wait for the new Bully Parker stuff to come out. They're releasing something every day.
Here's a question that I have. Sorry to interrupt. So I, full confession, I have not seen Spider-Man 3, for better or worse. But I kept wondering if when Peter 1 gets the apartment, and the guy's talking about like when rent's due and everything like that, all I could think of was like, is this the same guy? Like, is this the same guy that like that Toby Peter rented his apartment from? And like, I'm trying to like, you know, connect the dots and everything. And I'm like, is this universe's version of that landlord?
It might be that version. I mean, it definitely wasn't the same actor in terms of voice. Okay.
Well, but, that's what I was thinking of. Because I didn't know if it was like the same guy, and they were like, oh, here's another Easter egg. Like, we're going to throw the same landlord in there, and just like, no.
The crummiest apartment, the crummiest apartment, Spider-Man 3, you could really do without. But I don't know if that was the same one, but I did think it was a nice illusion. Oh, the biggest thing, other than the apartment and, you know, rent's due on the first, don't be late, Pete had to drop out of high school.
Yes, because there's no records of him.
Yeah,
because that was one of the things, you know, because people have been wondering, like, how does the spell work? And like, I mean, if nobody remembers Peter Parker, that means that like, it would have to be that there's no physical records of him either. because right, nobody would have remembered, or if there were, like it would be a weird case of there being like written records, so people would be like calling for attendance for Peter Parker, but then being like, "Who are you?" Like, "Well, I'm right. Peter Parker." I guess. All right. Whatever.
Right. Yeah. It gets messy when you think about it that hard.
It just makes it easier for Peter to just say, like, "Well, I'll just drop out of school. No one's gonna remember me anyway." So. Yeah.
Wow. Peter drops out of school and get his GED. So. Very different. Very different.
Yeah. Well, then, and now that makes me wonder, like, is he going to, you know, essentially do that and then, like, still try and get into MIT? Or is he just now going to be like, "I'm just Spider-Man now. This is what I do."
Well, that's what Toby told him at the end. He was like, "This is what we do." Yeah. Like, I get it. You know, so.
I don't think he's going to try and get a job at the Daily Bugle taking pictures of Spider-Man.
Yeah, I just can't even think.
I don't know how I feel about there was like a rumor or something that like J. Jonah Jameson was gonna like soften up on Spider, like see like that he was just a kid and what he had been through and what he's gone through, and then like he was gonna soften up on him and like actually help out or whatever, and that completely not the case, and just like leaned hard into kind of just being like an Alex Jones type figure.
Yeah. Oh, I was terrible.
I don't know how I feel about it.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, well, hey, that character was very consistent and everything, but you're right. It doesn't, with the digital age that they presented in all the drones, there's no value in a photo, you know, of Spider-Man.
That's also true. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if like, you know, when we think about the jobs that Spider-Man has had, he was a high school chemistry teacher, and then he was a lab technician, and he worked for the Bugle. Those are his three jobs. So I think he's a little too young to be a teacher or a substitute of any kind, although that would be great representation for me to see as a teacher.
Yep.
But I wonder if they're going to do the lab technician track again with him. You know, it would be a great way to have him meet other scientists in the world, in the MCU. You know, I don't know. There's so much. And what's a shame is that we won't see Spider-Man again for another 3 to 4 years. Like, yeah. When you think about these cycles,
yeah.
You know, the next Spider-Man trilogy won't start until 3 or 4 years from now.
Yeah. So. Here's another thing that I don't know. That I don't know if Marvel and Sony really thought about it. Mm-hmm. I would like to think that they did. But, so everybody remembers Spider-Man. So, like, this just means that, like, the Avengers and Doctor Strange, like, they still remember Spider-Man and that Spider-Man helped them during the Infinity Crisis and everything. And they just don't remember that, like, that it's this kid, Peter Parker. So does that then open up, you know, could Peter just, you know, show up, like, as, you know, as Spider-Man, and essentially just like now become a professional, like do what he was gonna do at the start of that first film and now just become a full fledged Avenger. And like, that's his job. I mean, based on the way the movie ended and my gut instinct of like licensing and how Sony wants to do things, probably not. But, you know, I think that would also be an interesting route, is he's like, well, I mean, I don't have an identity that I have to worry about. So like, why not just go full in on the Avengers thing?
Or family and friends. Everyone right? He knows either died or don't know him.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. And I would be curious because like, well, there's this whole arc happening now where the Avengers are broke. Like when you watch Falcon and Winter Soldier and yeah. He's like, you know, the blip, like we didn't get paid for any of that. We did that out of the goodness of their heart. So now, without someone like Tony or even Nick Fury like bankrolling them, who are the Avengers?
Yeah, that's a good point, right? Actually.
Who is it? I feel like they kind of disbanded after.
Probably, because yeah, it's so because like Sam and Bucky aren't Avengers.
Yeah, they're like a duo.
Yeah. I feel like the closest it might be Rhodey.
Okay, but he seems to be working for the government right now.
Because, well, and he never really stopped.
That's true.
So, yeah, because otherwise, so I'm trying to think of who it was, like, after, you know, Thor and Tony and everybody split off.
Right.
So, yeah, it was Sam, it was Cap, it was Natasha,
Hawkeye,
Wanda, Hawkeye. Yeah, they're pretty much done.
It's like they did everything. They got together to, you know, do Endgame. And then Cap went back in time. He came back. There's the thing with the shield. And it's like, you look at, without Cap, and I know, you know, Sam is the new Cap. But without Rogers, is that they all separated to, like, deal with their own things. And you could see it in, like, the series because they weren't cross-communicating. And, you know, Disney Plus, you can't get all of them in the same thing, et cetera, right? But they all had their own things. I think what we're probably seeing when I think about the end of Shang-Chi and how Wan came to get Shang is that maybe they're building, like, what is it, like the Dark Avengers, like the Mystic Avengers or whatever? So you'll have Strange, Wan, Shang-Chi, and America Chavez, maybe. I know they're building towards the Young Avengers.
Yeah, with Kate Bishop and Yelena.
Yeah.
Miss
Marvel's coming soon.
Yep. You know, yeah, so. Miss Marvel. So, yeah, maybe he becomes a founding member of the Young Avengers or something, because he certainly fits the name.
That'd be sick if he was like Young Justice's Dick Grayson.
Yeah.
Like Nightwing, but like for them. That'd be an interesting turn. I'd be down to see that. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, so it's and it also depends on how long Tom Holland wants to do it. Like, you know,
he keeps going back and forth, and I don't know if that's just like, you know, to like what his agent tells him to say so that he'll get more money or whatever, because, you know, there's that famous quote, I guess, of him saying, like, if I'm still Spider-Man by the time I'm 30, I've done something horribly wrong. And it's like, right. Great. So you've got one more film then.
Because he's like 25 right now.
Yeah.
You know, or a little older. So he got a couple of other movies coming down the pipe, you know, some other things to do. But like, as we know with these films, is that a lot of it is based on is like, can the character sign on to do it? That actor. And you know, if he gets a trilogy, what he's really going to get is a 6-picture deal. Because if you get the trilogy, then you also have, like, the 3 Avengers films, you know? Because, like, he was in Civil War and Infinity War and then Endgame.
Yep.
Along with the 3 Spider-Man films. And that was over the course of, like, almost a decade. Yeah. So,
And I'm sure his agent is probably telling him, yeah, you know, go with that or whatever. But also, like, I mean, if you sign on for more Spider-Man films, like, you get more money, because now it's this Screen Actors Guild, like, typecasting protection money or whatever.
Right.
Now, that they build into contracts.
I'm not opposed to him doing the next 6 pictures and him dying at the end of that so we get Miles Morales. Like, you know, like, it's the way that they're, like, they're prepping Riri Williams for Ironheart to the Iron thing, and it's just interesting how, like, we're literally at the stage that we never could have imagined when we were younger, right? Before, you would just reboot characters and recast them.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah, for,
like,
sure.
We're trying to tell a continuous story. Well, what happens when those actors age out or they end up having other interests?
Yeah.
You continue telling stories, but do you recast that character or do you move on to the next person with the mantle?
I think, in the case of Spider-Man specifically, I don't know if it works as well for other characters. I think it could be, if they want to, and they would need to work with Marvel continuity to make this work, but like, you have the next Spider-Man films be set maybe a couple years down the line and in the future or whatever, and, you know, that way, then, if Tom Holland doesn't want to do it, you find somebody who could pass as, like, an older Tom Holland and then cast them as Spider-Man.
That definitely – now, would they – do you think they would have to sideline Spider-Man for 10 years, or would they just be telling stories where it's like, this takes place in 2032? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I think that's what they would do. I don't, because they're not going to sideline
Spider-Man.
They're not going to sideline Spider-Man. You know, they're not going to do, you know, Venom and Morbius and
right.
Actually, yeah, it'd be really interesting is if, and I don't think they'd do it because you would need for a superhero film, you would need a hero. Is thinking back on Kraven of just like, what if it was just a Kraven film? But not make him like an anti-hero, but just like, it's just about him. Sort of like, you know, how they did the Joker film with who was it?
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes. Yeah, sort of where it's, you know, it's not about like a hero opposing a villain or whatever. It's just about this guy and how he turns, how he becomes who he is.
So you say MCU does a couple of those as time passes leading up to the recasting.
I don't foresee them doing that because, I don't know who would turn out to see like just a Kraven film without any Spider-Man.
right.
Or something, you know? So I don't know. I think what's likely is that they just throw more money at Tom Holland and get him to stay. I think that's the most likely thing.
It would be really cool to see like a older, I don't want to say grizzly, but like say like Into the Spider-Verse when you have,
and that's what Peter I'm thinking Parker. Of is you have like an older Peter Parker. That way then you can also introduce like, you know, Miles Morales and stuff and not have a
that yeah. would be a lot of fun too. We don't have to kill Pete. We don't have to kill Pete, y'all.
No,
Pete doesn't have to die. And it would be great to see like how does he, the weight of his decisions, not having Iron Man to back him, not having Aunt May, losing MJ, losing Ned, how does that impact him in his adult life? And not just one arc, you know, but like going through the stages. Does he eventually meet a Gwen Stacy in his universe? You know, does he like have some other interests? Would he have a daughter or something? There's a lot of stories to tell. And, you know, I'm just glad that we got beyond the Peter Parker's broke and he takes pictures of himself and also superheroes. Like, it's awesome to see other things.
Yeah.
And it's cool. That's why, like, you know, when there was criticism that came out about this film in terms of, like, what they had Peter do and how he wasn't really Peter because he wasn't responsible, it's like, there's room for adaptation. We have so many different versions of the same characters. Like it's okay. You know, it's okay to have something different. And like, if they're going to take these stories and reinterpret them and make them fun, enjoyable, and spectacles and blockbusters, like, I'm here for it. It's okay. I'll keep coming.
Yeah. All right. So we're kind of approaching our runtime for this episode. So do we have any final thoughts on this gem of a film?
Final thoughts is definitely a gem. I will say it's a celebration of 20 years of cinema.
Mm-hmm.
It's a celebration of Spider-Man. And for a studio to take, as I said earlier, one of the worst stories in comics and make it something enjoyable, something fun. Even though we got shades of that already into Spider-Verse, it's just a feat. And I would just tell anyone, if you haven't seen it or if you're still on the fence about what you feel about it, just allow yourself to have fun. When you think about all the films that have attempted something similar and failed, the fact that we got something this good, just enjoy it. Just let people enjoy it.
Yeah. The only thing that could have made this film better is another behind-the-scenes shot of Alfred Molina dancing to Fiddler on the Roof in his Doc Ock costume. that's what I'm gonna leave that on. But yeah, so if for whatever reason you listen to this whole episode and you haven't seen the film, go see it. And And if you have anything to add, you know, you can write me, Sean at 8-bitadventures.com. If you want to see more content from 8-Bit Adventures, be sure to check out 8-bitadventures.com. If you would like to help support this podcast, you can become a patron over at patreon.com/8bitadventures. Big shout out and thank you to all of our current patrons. Thank you very much for your support. The opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his music over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. And Jamal, thank you for being here. Do you have any links you want to promote? Any links you want to share?
Yeah, I just got my hashtag that I do for my movie reviews. It's just hashtag Molly's Movie Mentions. A triple M. Got to get that alliteration in there. You can find it on my Instagram. You can find it on my Facebook. And, you know, I'm working on making it a bigger thing. But the final thing I want to say is, Sean, is that if ever there's another film coming out and you want to get down and talk, just let me know. This was quite enjoyable.
Absolutely. Every time, basically. I'm always like, oh, this film was great. I really got to talk with Jamal about it. And then, you know, so I will make a bigger effort to try and make it work. It's a little easier now that my schedule is a little bit more flexible on when I can record these things. So, yeah, definitely. Especially, you know, I think when's the next big one coming out? Is it Doctor Strange?
Doctor Strange comes out, I think, in May. Well, the Batman comes out in March.
I'm probably not going to go see the Batman.
You're not going to see the Batman.
Probably not. You know, I haven't watched any DC films that have recently come out. Like, no Suicide Squad. No Batman, no Justice League, no Aquaman, none of that stuff.
You could pass on a lot of those, but well, you know what? When I write my movie review, you can read it, and maybe that'll sway you to go see it or not. And
maybe we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be great to have something good to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. If not, I think Doctor Strange is the next Marvel one. So we'll definitely have to hook up for that. So. All right, folks, that's going to wrap things up here. Thank you for joining us. And as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.